apologies for the delayed start. We have had a technical issue. So while the session will work in terms of seeing the slides for the people who are joining us online at the moment, the slides here in the room aren't going to change. So we are in the process of just quickly printing you some slides for those of you in the room so you can follow along with those. So bear with us, but I'll do a bit of an introduction before we start using the slides. Okay. So welcome, first of all. Thank you for being here for the Part 3 orientation session for Semester 1 in 2017. My name is Sarah Tedesco. I'm the Chief Operating Officer here at the Actuaries Institute, which means that I look after a number of things, including education, member services, events, and a few other areas as well. Well done on being here, particularly those of you from Sydney who might have come from, you know, a day at work or other commitments on a particularly hot day, so well done on that. And also welcome to those of you who are attending online. We've got a number of people live online with us via webinar at the moment. It's great to have all of you with us. For those of you online, we will have your lines muted, so just for the moment, and at the end we'll open it up for questions, but there are other ways for asking questions, which I'll go through in a moment as well. For those of you in the room, in case we have any sort of emergency, I'm also the fire warden in the building, so I will direct you as to where you need to go, so don't worry about that. Unfortunately, we're only on level 2, so it's not far down the stairs. Congratulations, as I said, on being here, because now you're one step ahead of everyone else studying Part 3. Okay, there's valuable information here today for you to hear and for you to understand what the expectations are that will assist you in studying successfully. It's a really valuable session to get an idea of what you're getting yourself into and set yourself up for success. So we hope you find it useful. As I'm told when I go to each graduation ceremony, this is a massive commitment. Okay? People tell me, students tell me, it consumes their life. Okay, for at least a few years. So I want to be realistic about this. It does take up quite a lot of your time. And you might find that the work-life balance goes a bit askew for a little while. So today we want to give you a better idea of the support available to you. So the support from the Institute, but the support you may also need to think about requesting from work or from your family. And also what to expect in terms of studying Part 3, because it is different to university study. Okay? It's not the same approach. And that is sort of evident in the course materials, in how we run the tutorials, and in the assessments as well. It's really important today that you ask questions, okay? We're here purely for you tonight, so you better ask some questions because that's why we're all standing here. And we expect you to ask questions. If you're thinking it, someone else is likely to think it, so they'll be very appreciative of you asking the question. So in the room, if you've got a question at any stage, just raise your hand, okay? We're happy to answer it. If you're online, you've got two options. You can send an email to education@actuaries.asn.au and we've got someone monitoring that as we go through the session. They'll let me know the question and we'll do our best to answer that. Or if you're on the webinar, you can also, in the chat box, select all participants or everyone and then type in your question and we'll make sure that we also respond to that. If you've got a question that you don't want to ask in front of everyone else, then after the session today, you can also either email education@actuaries.asn.au or you can call the Institute and ask to speak to a member of the education team. So again, happy to answer any questions you may have. We've got a few different presenters here with us tonight. So Eleanor Mazzando is our education manager and team leader. She's going to be taking you through quite a bit of the detail tonight. We also have Orsa Chanthaphone, who's in the room, who's our education coordinator and will be monitoring the webinar and letting us know of any questions that come through. We have some other very special guest speakers as well. So we have Danny Bachara with us in the front row here, who is a chief examiner. So he's the chief examiner for C2B Life Insurance. So he's going to be talking through the exams, what chief examiners are looking for, how they mark them, all of those sorts of things. And then we have two recent past students who aced their subjects, so they obviously know all the secrets, and they won prizes in the last year. So Tim Hillman and David Barnes will be here as well in the front row to talk to you about their experience and their tips for going through Part 3. At the end of the session today, for those of you in the room, we've got pizza being delivered and we've got drinks, so we also hope you make the most of the time to network and get to know each other a little bit better, maybe even form little study groups or whatever's going to help you. and ask any further questions that you may have. For those of you online, we don't quite have virtual pizza yet, I'm sorry, but we hope that we get the chance to meet with you at some stage soon in the future. So Eleanor's now going to start taking you through some of the detail of the presentation. We've started to hand out printouts of the slides. You may need to share between a couple of you at the moment, and we'll get the rest out as soon as we can. So follow along with those, but hopefully we'll make it as clear as we can as well for you.
Hi, everybody, and welcome again. And, well, as Sarah's already said, our apologies for the technical difficulties. So I'll be going sort of the overview of what our Part 3 program is, how it's assessed, and also the different tools that we have available to assist you guys and to help you, how we can be contacted, and the different things, you know, that can be accessed throughout the semester. So as most of you... So most of you are here, obviously, in interest in becoming a fellow, but as you are aware, in our program, you can become either an associate or a fellow. Our associate pathway involves the Part 1, Part 2, your three-year practical experience, attending the professionalism course, and then you become an associate. And most of you are here, obviously, to follow our fellow pathway, which is the Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, which is what we'll be talking about mainly this evening, professionalism course, and then once you've completed all those components, you will become a fellow. So our Part 3 is made up of four modules. So a couple of you are here for Module 1. There's Module 2, 3, and 4. Our Module 1 is made up of a couple of different options. There's the Course 7A. So Course 7A is made up of two components. There's the AC9 exam, which is the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries, the UK exam, and then the other part of that assessment is the attendance at the ERM workshop. The format of the ERM workshop changed last year, so it's now only a one-day workshop. And for those of you who are registered, you'll get access to the LMS, and the other tools that are available for you in the LMS is an online discussion forum, which is an opportunity for you guys to ask any questions that you have around the material that you're studying in preparation for the UK ST9. And in that forum, the forum moderator comes on once a week, and so he's available to take questions. He's available to help you with any sort of current issues around ERM, which you might have questions around. And he will also post questions for you guys to think about in terms of, you know, these are the current issues that are important in ERM and you could possibly have questions from this. And you can ask those questions in there and he will respond to you and he will give you answers. He will give you a bit of guidance. Along with the online forum, there is also, there will be three tutorials as well for ERM. So that's a new thing that's happening for ERM, so that's an opportunity sort of similar to this for you guys to come into the room, listen to the tutor speaking and access it online as well. And yeah, it's an opportunity to ask questions. It's an opportunity also to go through some practice questions in preparation for ERM. And then the workshop is a one-day workshop, and the main focus of the workshop is the Australian perspective of ERM. As the exam is set by the UK, this gives you an opportunity just to look at some cases of how ERM is handled here in Australia. The other modules that are available for you in Module 1, you can either do any of the Module 2, so that's our Course 2A, which is Life Insurance, General Insurance, which is the Course 3A and B. You can do either A or B of the Investments, Management and Finance, or you can do A or B of the Global Retirement Income System, so GRIS. The other ways to get exemptions for Part 1 is to complete a PhD. The material for that has to be relevant to the studies that you're currently doing for actuarial. You can have a CPA qualification as well, or a CFA qualification to get an exemption for Module 1 of Part 3. And the other option for Part 3 is the health module, which is an exam as well, which is the STA1 exam, the health exam from the UK, and also completing the online PHI course. And that's how those are the options available for Module 1. So for Module 2 and 3, we obviously have the four main specializations, which is life insurance, general insurance, investments, management and finance, and GRIS. And we will have a little more information on how those are assessed as we go through. And then we have Module 4, which is the commercial actuarial practice. And that involves a four-day residential. So for students who are sitting CAP for the first time, they attend a four-day residential, which is held here in Sydney. And obviously, there's one held each semester. And it's held out at the Macquarie Graduate School of Management. And you do need to attend that if it's your first time. And then if you're... And then there's the exam as well for CAP. So in order to support you, we have the learning management system. So most of you hopefully now have access to that. If anyone doesn't, please feel free to drop us an email at education, and we can definitely get that sorted for you very quickly. And in the learning management system, that's sort of our main communication tool with the students throughout the semester. So we do ask you to make sure that you are enrolled into all the different forums. You are automatically enrolled into the news forum, which is where we will put up most of the announcements, the reminders about tutorials, information about maybe any documents that you need to access if it's on the website, and any sort of things that are coming up. And so if you have a question as well around anything, you're welcome to use the news forum to contact the education team. We monitor that daily, or you can email us directly as well. That's where you'll also find a calendar of events. So anything coming up, you should have gotten a reminder about orientation, all your tutorials are in there, when the professionalism course is coming up, when CAP is coming up, all those things are in there in the LMS, and they're accessible through the calendar for you. And the participation forum is also in the LMS. So this is a component of your assessment for Module 2 and Module 3, that you have to complete the discussion forum, and this is 10% of the mark to of your assessment mark, and that's available for you. That's available for you in our LMS. It is moderated by course leaders, and they're all fellows, and they're all available there, obviously, to help you as well. Questions, topics, that sort of thing can all be done through there. All the course notes and readings are available there, as well as links just to past exams, past tutorials. So if you want to get sort of a head start on what to expect in the tutorials, we'll have all the past tutorials up there so you can watch a tutorial. There's materials from the previous tutorials, maybe questions that they've covered in those tutorials. Those are all available in the past tutorials section for you to be able to access. For Module 2 and 3, there are three tutorials per semester. So the tutorials, the first tutorial will be starting end of January. So you can have a look there and just see when they are. And then you're welcome. Some of the tutors are here in Sydney. So those who are in Sydney, we always let you know that there's a room available here. But for every tutorial, you can actually attend it here. And then some of the tutors are in Melbourne. So for the Melbourne ones, they will dial in and they'll be accessible for questions. And, you know, you can come into the institute here, or you can just dial in from home and watch it from home. And after each tutorial, we do make the slides and the materials all available for you online. Other resources that are available for you as well is obviously the past papers and past assignments that are all up on the website, and they're available for you to look at. We also have the BOE reports. The BOE report from semester 2 is currently in its final review, and as soon as that goes up, we'll let you know as well through the learning management system that is available for you to download and have a look at. So you'll just have, you know, on your pictures of slides, you'll have a picture of the LMS there. So the Part 3 policies and procedures that are in place to assist you throughout the semester. We have a fee relief policy that's available. So that is, there are a couple of qualifying countries that meet that. Obviously, you know, we have a list of about 25 countries, if I'm not mistaken. And you can find everything that I'm just referring to now on our website in our forms section. So if there's anything there that maybe you weren't aware of and you want to go see, that's where you'll find it. And so our fee relief policy is in place for all of our managed courses. So the institute managed courses are the ones that you can usually apply for fee relief for, and that's usually a 50% reduction on the fees. And you can have a look at the different, there's pre-qualifying you have to meet three qualifying criteria in order to get that. So if anyone, you know, wants to take advantage of that, I know a couple of you have already taken advantage of it, that's where you'll be able to find the form. We also have in place an option to withdraw from a subject. Obviously, we don't want you to withdraw from the subject, but if throughout the semester, you know, circumstances change, work begins to overload you, we know that, you know, family circumstances may change, you may have to move overseas or anything like that, there is that option available on the website as well. What you need to be aware with that is that there are certain dates, and obviously as we get closer and closer to exams, the amounts that you can get back reduce because of the time that you've been within the semester, but every case is taken on a case-by-case basis. So please feel free to give us a call if you have any questions around that, if you're experiencing any difficulty throughout the semester, and just let us know and we will help you through that process. The other thing that you will also find on our Part 3 Forms page is the form, which is an application for a temporary exam centre. So we have the standard exam centres, which are located quite a few places all over the world, as well as here in Sydney. But if we have the case where we have two students or less sitting at a standard exam centre, we will ask for you to arrange a temporary exam centre. And you would have to look for a fellow who would be able to supervise you for your exam, obviously under exam conditions. For CAP, we do have only two standard exam centres. So if you're sitting your CAP exam either in Melbourne or Sydney, there will be a standard exam centre available. But if you're sitting outside of Sydney and Melbourne, you will need to arrange a temporary exam centre. And there's forms available. We will also get in touch with you within the next couple of weeks if, you know, during registration process, possibly you forgot to nominate an exam center, and we'll get in touch and we'll ask you where you want to sit. And there's also the option to change that. So if, you know, you move, you know, you have to go from Sydney to Melbourne maybe for work, you can always change your exam center, but we ask you to do that as early as possible so that we can arrange that center for you and make sure that you've got a place to sit your exam. Another thing that's available for you is our special consideration policy. And this is also in, it's to do with the exams, and for those of you who sit CAP, you can use that as well for your assignment. If anything, if you need like any changes to the exam environment, so for example, you break your foot, you know, something happens, you need a special chair, you've got a sore wrist and you need to bring something special into the exam, we ask for you to complete this form and so that we can make sure that those arrangements are available for you. And we also need to make the chief examiners and the exam team aware of any changes to the exam environment for so that they're aware. This policy can also be used after the exam. So if anything goes on during the exam, let's say you had to sit the exam and you were sick maybe, and or, you know, something happened in the exam environment, if there's a disruption and the like, we ask for you to complete this form as well so that we can make the exam team aware of the circumstances under which you had to sit the exam. Obviously, the institute team is going to make sure that you have the best exam environment, but there are things that are uncontrollable that may happen personally and also just at centres that are outside of our control, and so we ask for you to always make us aware of those circumstances, and we can also make the exam team aware of the circumstances that you set the exam under. Another thing in place to support you with the exams, but this is more for after the exams, we have in place the exam performance interview. And so there's a few criteria that volunteer for this. You've usually sat the exam twice and you have a C average. And you get the opportunity to basically have an interview with either the chief examiner or the assistant examiners. And they go through your paper with you and kind of give you some direction on where you're falling down, how you can improve. And hopefully that assists you in your next attempt that you won't need to use that again. Do we have any questions at this point from anyone in the room? No? Any questions? All right, so we'll just keep going on. All right, so I'll just talk through the assessment section for you now. So I'll kind of follow the order of the modules. For module one, as I've already mentioned, there's the ST9 exam, which is 100% of the assessment, and then there is the compulsory attendance at the ERM workshop. So to have completed course 7A, you have to at least have attended a workshop and passed the exam. You don't have to do that in the same semester, so you can sit the exam in one semester and then attend the workshop in the following semester. It's the same sort of situation for ST1, which is the health component for module one. So the exam is 100% of the assessed, and then you have to complete the online health insurance course. So for module two and three, which is 2A, 2B, 3A, 3B, 5A, 5B, 6A, 6B, there is the online participation mark, which I mentioned, which is 10% of the mark, and then the exam itself, which is a three-hour exam. It is, and it has three questions, and that's 90% of the assessment mark. For module four, which is the commercial actuarial practice, for first-time students, you have to attend the residential course. And then there's the post-course assignment, which comes to you 2 weeks after the residential, and that's 20% of the mark, and then the exam is 80% of your assessment mark for commercial actuarial practice. So the exam for modules two and three, which is general insurance, life insurance, GRIS, and IMF, it's a three-hour exam, and you get 15 minutes of reading and planning time at the beginning, so altogether 3 hours and 15 minutes. It's an open book exam. We've got information available in the LMS already on in terms of what you can bring to the exam. You can bring in a calculator. There's certain types of calculators that you can bring in, and you can bring in any hard copy textbooks or notes. Now, a suggestion here is that you don't cart in everything because it's obviously a small desk, and it's a short time. You will be given access to the course notes as a soft copy, so you will have that available, as well as the textbooks. So the prescribed textbooks will be available for you in soft copy in the exam. So, but obviously you're welcome to bring anything, your personal notes, and you know if you've got your own course notes as well that you've marked up, you're welcome to bring those along. The exam is conducted using MS Word and Excel. The access to the internet throughout the exam is blocked, so none of the links and the, and that sort of thing will work in the notes. And so past exams and solutions can be accessed through the LMS. They're also available on the website. The solutions for the last exams are already up, except for 2A. And that's only because 2A used the course guide as part of the teaching and the learning and the tutorials, and then as soon as the third tutorial is done with 2A, you will be able to access that. So the online discussion forum, as we said, it makes up 10% of the marks. So what they're looking for with the online discussion forum is that you must post two original posts. So two original posts, meaning you've initiated a discussion around an aspect of the course, and then they're looking for four posts where you have responded critically to others. We ask that you don't leave this till the end of the semester, because that just makes it really difficult for the guys to mark, but if you do it throughout the semester, we constantly remind you, and we put up a regular report to let people know how it's going in terms of how many people have completed, how many people still have to complete, you know, and the requirements, and so you can always call us if you want to sort of find out how you're going. But that's done once a month, and that's put up in the discussion forum, so there'll be a regular report letting you know so far of the course, maybe 20 have met the requirements and 40 still have a way to go. So if you know you're in the 40, you know, jump in at any point and get that done. And do not sort of think that, oh, it's only 10%, because this 10% is really important. And a lot of students who were usually like on the borderline, close to passing, but they were on the fail side, that 10% can make a really big difference in your mark. So, yeah, please jump in there. There is, as you'll see on your slides, a bit of a forum participation marking guide. Obviously, it's a bit small for you to read over there, but the notes, the slides will be available for you in the LMS afterwards if you want to look at it, in terms of what they're looking for in a post and, you know, well-communicated, sometimes well-communicated, and the different kind of marks that you can get for the post. So that's worth taking a look at before you put up your post. So from a little bit of information from semester two, so the chair of the board of examiners has noted that the proportion of students achieving the maximum mark of 10 out of 10, so out of all the students from last semester, only 36% of the students received the 10 out of 10 mark. So don't, you know, get involved with the a discussion forum. There's a bit of a table there for you to look at, obviously, to show you the different marks, how many students in each subject, and how many candidates got the 10 and the 9. 2B, unfortunately, is the lowest, which has only 5 students getting the 10 mark out of the 46 students that sat. So that's a little bit on the assessment and what to expect there. Does anyone have any questions at this point? No questions? All right, well, if there's no questions, we're going to call on one of the chief examiners, Danny Bachara, who is here. And he's the course 2B life insurance chief examiner, and he's going to give you a little more insight, I guess, into what the chief examiners are looking for when they are watching over the subject. Danny.
Thank you, Eleanor. Good evening, everyone. So my name is Danny Bachara. I'm the chief examiner for course 2B life insurance. So I'll just be discussing briefly this evening a bit about the exam format for 2B and the other related modules, such as everything except CAP and the UK exams for the Part 3s. I'll also briefly discuss some tips about exam technique, what the examiners are looking for in determining a successful candidate, and some tips for preparing for the exam. And then at the end, I can take some questions or during the question and answer session. So as Eleanor mentioned, the exam format is a computer-based exam for the Part 3s. It's for 2B and the related modules, modules 2 and 3, it is 3 hours in length with 15 minutes reading or planning time. And it's computer-based in that you have access to Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel, where you do some calculations in Excel and have Microsoft Word there to type up your answers. So in that respect, it is very different to the Part 1s and Part 2s, which are written exams, and it's very different to the UK exams, for example, the ERM and the ST1 health exams. So that is one point to note. There will be at least one case study question within the exam, and by case study we mean it involves some sort of calculation within Excel, and then using that calculation base to form part of the answers to the rest of the questions in that question. It is open book, as Eleanor mentioned, so you are available to bring in hard copy materials, and obviously the soft copy textbook and course notes will be provided to you. So in that respect, it is very different to the Part 1s and 2s, as well as the UK ST1 and ST9 exams, which are closed book and handwritten exams. And it's just important to note as you go through the studies and start looking at past exam papers that from last year, 2016 onwards, there's no multiple choice component. So during 2013 to 2015, there was a multiple choice component of the exam. But from 2016 onwards, including this year, there is no multiple choice component. So it's purely that long answer question in Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel. So that's just important to note. In terms of exam technique, I've just got a few pointers here that I found useful when I was studying, and I've heard other people find useful, but obviously some of the top students from last year will have some good pointers about that as well. One thing that sticks with me is read the question twice, but answer the question once. So you're not going to get marks for not answering the question or for answering a different question. And you're not going to get extra marks for answering it more than once. You're just wasting your time. So that's why it's important to use the reading and planning time to understand what the questions are, and then when you go through it properly, to understand what it's asking you to do and to try to answer that as succinctly as possible to enable you to maximise the marks that you'll get for the given amount of time. Second point would be don't waffle. Use succinct sentences in your answers. So if you've made a point, move on rather than, you know, sometimes we see as examiners people put one or two points and they elaborate a lot about it, but the questions ask for multiple points and they just you get a mark or two here and there, but then you fail to use that time to get the extra marks for the extra points. Structure your answer well. So use bullet points where appropriate. that I think that always makes it clearer to the exam markers and the examiners to understand what point you're trying to make and to differentiate between the points. So that's always good to use bullet points. And I always say make it easy for the marker. So when you're thinking about how to structure your answer, when you're preparing for the exam, practice structuring your answer in a way to make it easy for the marker. So imagine you're the marker when you review your attempts at past papers. What can you do to make the life of the exam marker easier? Because the easier their life is to give you marks, the more chance that you're going to get the marks. If they have to deliberate whether they think you mean something or not, then you're making it hard for the exam marker to give you marks, and that's not what you want to do. I say hit the nail on the head. So make your points precisely and accurately without, dragging on, and put the most important points first. So if a question, most questions will be open-ended and there can be multiple correct answers, but if you start off, if you only list the least important answers, then you're not showing the core concepts of the course. So when it comes to the borderline reviews, that's one thing we look at is how well has the candidate demonstrated the core concepts of the course. If they've answered most of the questions with the key concepts first and brought those out in their answers, then that demonstrates that they understand the important aspects to bring out in their responses. So try to think about what the most important concepts are rather than just, writing everything that comes to your head. Provide additional insight. So answer the question, but also give a so what, especially when it asks for it. So there'll be questions that require complex judgment, and in that respect, it'll typically start off with asking you something to do with concepts and trying to explain a concept or convey something, but then it'll also ask for some level of judgment. And so that's where the so what comes in. How can you explain what it means for the scenario at play? And then one last thing is think about who your audience is. So typically when you start going through the exam questions, you'll see that typically they'll give you who your audience is. The chief financial officer has asked you for this. The chief actuary has asked you for this. The chief executive officer has asked you for this. Now, your answer to each of those people will be different because they've got a different context, a different level of understanding. So it's important to bring that out in your answer. So if you're writing to the chief executive officer, you wouldn't use a lot of the technical jargon that you would if you were writing to the chief actuary. So it's important to keep and adapt your answer to those points. Now, just briefly on what the examiners are looking for in a successful answer. So part three, there's an element of do we believe this candidate is ready to practice as a fellow of the Institute of Actuaries? So you're asked to show your understanding of the key concepts of the course, that you understand that and you can apply the principles. So you'll find the key principles of the course in the syllabus or the key performance objectives. So make sure, before the end of the semester, you read through them and are able to say to yourself, yes, I've read this through the textbook and I can apply that knowledge and understanding and judgment to scenarios. Avoid statements which show serious misunderstanding or are dangerous for an actuary to make. So that's another important aspect. So if going through our borderline review, there's statements which show that there's a serious misunderstanding of key concepts or even the dangerous understanding, then that will weigh heavily on whether you pass or fail. So bear that in mind and make sure that you avoid making statements which convey serious misunderstanding. So it is rare, very rare, but just something to keep in mind. And then finally, just present reasonable arguments to back up your conclusions. So don't just state what your conclusion is. State your conclusion and say why that's your conclusion. And just finally, recognise when a number looks wrong. So obviously with the actual exams, there's going to be an element of number crunching or numbers or calculations. And a lot of candidates make errors in the exam and it's understandable. But knowing when a number looks unreasonable is one of the key traits of an actuary. And so if in your response there's a number which is clearly unreasonable, state that. Say, I don't have time in the exams to state that, you know, net assets are negative, this doesn't make sense, something like that. So you laugh, but last semester there were candidates in the calculation who had negative net assets. Because it's just an outworking of the calculation. Something's gone wrong. Could be simple as the you know, mislinking a cell, which is understandable. But having that foresight to step back and look at the number and say, this doesn't make sense, I made an error somewhere, that shows a level of judgment. And final section is preparing for the exam. So practice lots of past questions under exam conditions. So some students start practicing too late and they don't get to practice under exam conditions. So it's really important because when you get under that, get into the exam room and you've got 3 hours, it's very different to being at home and having a study day to go through a question, a paper. So make sure that you've practiced under exam conditions because that'll serve you well. Swap attempts with other students and mark each other's work. So this will give you different perspectives. So other students will pick up things that you don't, and it's always good to have someone peer review your work and give you feedback. And then that links into your work environment. So ask actuaries you know, for example, at work, for their tips and for their support. So tip, most employers that I know offer some form of study support where the qualified actuaries support the actual students. And so that will be one of your most valuable resources along with the LMS and the discussion forum. But having someone more senior that you can ask questions of and who can mark your paper, give you feedback and give you tips is important. Keep abreast of industry issues. So typically the Part 3 questions are practical in terms of they're not just theoretical out of the textbook, so they are within the realm of practicality, which means that real topical issues in the life insurance industry, in the general insurance industry, in the investment industry, in the retirement income industry are relevant and they may be brought into questions within the context of the syllabus. So that's always important to just see what's happening in your industry once a week. Just look up what the news in the life insurance or in general insurance. And the Actuaries Institute actually has a daily news service where they can send you daily snapshots of the news and by industry, and that's great. If you just scroll through that for 5 minutes each day, that's a good form of study because you are keeping abreast of industry issues. Over participate in the online participation forum. So as Eleanor mentioned, it is assessed, but you'll get the more you put in, the more you'll get out of it. So make sure you think about what you want to post, and there might be some interesting posts you want to reply to. So get involved there. Don't leave it too late. Start now. So, you know, the exams are only around 3 months away. So there's not a lot of time between now and then. So you do want to start now. If you leave it too late, you might find you don't have enough time to go through the course and do those past papers and get feedback from your fellow students and people at work. And finally, the tutorials. So make sure that you... at least watch the tutorials if you can't attend it, because there's usually valuable insight, valuable discussion there. So it's well worth the 2 hours for the 3 sessions to set those aside and just understand what's gone through in the tutorials. So were there any questions at this moment? Yes.
So my question is, for the past exam papers, we know that they have been changing of topics throughout the years. So how do we know that some topic is more relevant in order to make our time more efficient? So if we spend a lot of time doing past papers, but some of the questions are not relevant, and then that could...
So typically the syllabus... For most of the subjects haven't changed in the past few years. Certainly for 2B, it's like that. So obviously the exam only examines certain parts of the material, and so So doing past papers, you know, different past papers will focus on different areas, key topics. So it's important that you understand, read the syllabus, and if the questions are related to the syllabus, then it's worth knowing it, even though, you know, a question on that topic might not come up in the exam, but you do need to understand all the topics of the syllabus to prepare for the exam, because everything there is accessible. So does that answer your question?
Thank you. I have a second question.
Sure.
So for people who are not working in that industry,
yes.
Except reading the industry news, do you have other tips for people to prepare better for the practical questions?
I think get in touch with a fellow student, someone else who is working in the industry, and they can be sort of a study buddy, or you can run ideas off them, because they might have access to someone more senior actuary in their organisation. So that could be a way to help out, where you catch up once a week and you discuss things, and then they might say, oh, that's a good point, I'm not sure either, I might ask my manager next week, or post on the forum is another way. So you just want access to people who you can bounce ideas off, and the forum is one way, and work is another, and fellow students is another, yet again.
Thank you.
There will be a question and answer session at the end where we can go through further questions. Thank you.
We had a few other points that were sort of provided to us by Bruce Thompson, who is also a chief examiner and a course leader as well. He has said knowing the textbook and course material is necessary, but it's not sufficient to pass. So this is where we're getting at. You need to understand what's happening in the industry. You need to be aware of what those key headline issues are and the situations that are being faced by people working in that practice area. Because there might be a scenario in the exam that's based on that, that requires you then to apply the skills that you've learnt in the course to that scenario. So it's good for you to have an understanding of what's going on in the industry. And the Actuaries Institute provide a lot of different resources to you to keep abreast of that, but it's also possible to discuss those in discussion forums, at tutorials, all of those sorts of things. So that's one key aspect of how this is different to university. Okay, you are expected to know what's going on in the practice area and understand how to apply your skills to that. You also need a broad industry understanding, so talk with colleagues, acquaintances, what they're doing in their work. See if you can find a fellow who's prepared to mentor you even, if you don't have that connection with work, and read widely. So the discussion forum, absolutely of value in all of that. There is some element of time pressure in the three-hour exam, but we do design it and test it that it can be done in 3 hours by a just passing student. Is sort of our measure there. So it definitely is possible, but as has already been said by Danny, practice under exam conditions so you know what that 3 hours feels like, because it can go past fast. I'll talk a little bit in a moment about pass rates, and that obviously we've talked about a little bit, the work-life balance might go out the window a little bit while you're undertaking the study. So, pass rates. Pass rates on average are around 33%. So what I will say to you is, if you've decided that you're going to pass this unit of part three that you're about to study, look to your left, look to your right, because those people are going to fail. That's what 33% means. Okay? So how are you going to make sure you're in that 33%? And the tips and things that we've heard from students relate to how much time you actually need to devote to this. So at least 11 to 20 hours a week of study. Now, if you're already working a 40-hour week, and probably you're working longer than that if you've got a full-time job, add that number of hours to 20 study hours to ideally getting some sleep and possibly having some time to eat and doing all the other things that you might need to do, and it can be hard to make it all balance. Okay? I certainly think back to, it's about 20 years ago, but when I did my MBA and I was working full-time, it was really hard yakka. I would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, go and do a full day's work, leave at 6 so I could get to uni by 7. This is before the internet guys and webinars and all those sorts of things. Sit in a 3 to 4 hour lecture, then join my classmates in a computer lab so we could do our assignment together till about 1 o'clock in the morning, get home at 1:30 in the morning, get back up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go to work again. And that, you know, went for a number of years. It is hard work. Okay, worth it. And certainly the people that I speak to at the graduation dinner say, it was really hard work, but it was worth it. I learned a lot, and it has and is really important to my career. So keep the end goal in mind, but do think really seriously about how you're going to manage this, how you're going to balance it, and what support you require. We do want students to pass. Okay, so we go through a lot of effort to try and make sure that the exams are appropriate. We don't design them wanting students to fail. We set them with a consistent benchmark in mind that's about saying, this level of person can call themselves a fellow of the Institute. It's really important from a brand perspective of the profession that we keep that consistent benchmark in mind. We go through an extensive process for drafting and setting the exams. So as part of that, we make sure that they can be completed in a 3-hour period. We have recent students sit the exams under exam conditions to make sure that they can complete it in 3 hours and to give us feedback on the clarity of the questions, the marking guide if it's fair, all of those sorts of things, just as part of that process. As Eleanor said, the exam is open book. Don't bring a suitcase. As you start studying, really think about what notes are going to help you in the exam situation and start drafting them now. The internet is blocked. Don't expect for links to work and all of those sorts of things in soft copying materials. Print those out if you want to be able to access them. Word and Excel's used, so obviously you'd be familiar with those. And past exam questions and solutions and the Board of Examiners report are on the website, on the LMS. So make sure you have a look at them. It's got valuable information in there. We're really relying on you to get the pass rate up. I'd like to see it go up. So please make sure that you do what you can to get that commitment right, because we really don't want to see you have to resit. Okay? It's a lot of effort, and we understand that. As I said, it's very different studying at university. You're not going to be chased by someone to hand something in. You're not going to be chased by someone to attend something to remind you that a tutorial's on. It is completely up to you. You're not going to be chased to be saying, you should be at this stage of reading through the course materials by now. That's all up to you to plan. It's up to you to set up your own study groups. It's up to you to organise all of this. This is not university, this is adult education. You may not even see anyone, some of you, that might be studying in remote locations. You know, so you may not get to go to a tutorial or see anyone in person throughout the whole semester. So think about how you're going to use the online resources available to you as well. The course is about judgment, and I reiterate that because some people approach this like they've approached parts 1 and 2, which is, let's learn all the content, and as long as I can answer questions about that content, I'll pass. This is different. You need to understand the content in such a way in which you can apply it to different scenarios that you may never heard of. So really ask yourself those questions as you're working through it. Can I apply this? How is it relevant to business? What does the stakeholder want to know? As Danny said, the CEO will want to know something different to the chief actuary or the risk officer or whoever it may be. The discussion forums, use them. It's the 10 marks. I sit in the Board of Examiners meetings and it is heartbreaking when you've got someone there who gets 4 out of 10 for the discussion forum and all they needed was another 2 marks to pass the unit, pass the module. Okay? We want to be able to pass you, so it's an easy 10 marks, really. And if you contribute earlier in the semester, it's much easier to get the original posts than if you're doing it at the end of the semester. So might as well get started now, as a number of people have already said. So think about how you're going to fit it all in and form study groups as best you can, because it will help by talking with other people studying the same sort of thing. Discuss your requirements with work, with your family, make expectations clear, set yourself up for success as much as possible. Because we really want to see you succeed, and let us know if you have any questions or if there's any support that you think we can provide to you. On that note, I'm going to quickly ask if there are any questions before I hand over to some of our past students. Any questions online? Any questions in the room? So I will now hand over to past students. So we have, as I mentioned, two people here to speak with us. Tim is going to speak first, so I'll ask Tim to come up. Thank you.
Well, can everyone hear me? Well, thanks very much to the Actuaries Institute for inviting me to be here. So my name is Tim Hillman, and I am an actuary now, working at Taylor Fry, and I completed my Part 3 exams in Semester 1 of last year. So as we've heard, the pass rate for Part 3 is well under 50%, and in the last semester that I did it, it was 32%. So that is quite a chastening statistic for anyone who comes here really enthusiastic about how they're going to ace all their exams. And so I guess the fundamental question you have to... thank you. Sorry, the fundamental question you have to ask yourself, which has already been alluded to, is how do you improve your chances of success? Because you know that, that going into these exams, the cohort of people who are doing them with you have, just like you, been very successful in Parts 1 and 2, and yet you don't want to go into exam thinking that your chance of passing is 32%. That would be tough. So you have to think of what you're going to do to make your chances higher than that. And I would suggest that just turning up this orientation session is a start, because you've already shown that you're enthusiastic enough to want to attend this sort of event. So I'm predicting right here that more than 32% of the people in this room are going to pass their exams this semester. But my first piece of advice is this, which is maybe a little bit controversial, almost contradicts what we might have heard before, but if you understand the course material, you will pass the exam. So that is in my experience, is true in the same way it was for Parts 1 and 2. The reason I made that point is because I've heard this argument from people in the past, which is, boy, I really hope in this exam they happen to test a subject which is relevant to my own particular expertise, for example, what I've been doing at work or so on. But my experience is that the course has a syllabus, and all of the exams questions are fair, and they ask from the prescribed syllabus. So if you know the material which is examinable, you have an excellent chance of passing the exam. The problem is that there is a lot of material to cover. So we've heard a lot about this already, and this list is incomplete. You've got the course notes, of course, but they include lots of extra reading, lots of references which are not even included in the course notes. You've maybe got a textbook with lots of examples and exercises. You've got discussion forums, past exams, and in previous semesters there are assignments as well. You have to attend the tutorials potentially, or you should, perhaps you should, and you have to do preparation and homework. And also you might have to know something about the topical issues in your field. So my next controversial statement is that it is very, very hard to be on top of everything. In fact, I would say extremely hard. And so it is necessary to prioritise. You've got to actually look at all the different ways you could prepare for this exam, and you probably can't do all of them, so you're going to have to make choices. And so what follows are some of my suggestions. First thing you should do is read through a couple of past exams early, even before you've read the notes, or even before you're really across the course. So there's plenty of exams to do. They go back to 2005. So you don't need to worry about spoiling them for yourself later. Just read through a couple of them and read them with the marking guide. And I think that will just help you to know what it is you're going to be encountering right from the start. You'll appreciate the scope of the course and the required level of understanding. And if you look at the marking guide, you'll see that the margins between success and failure are very small. Look at the mark required to get a B, which is a passing grade for any question. Look at the mark required to get a D, and then look at the difference between those two marks as a proportion of the total marks available for the question, and you'll see that the margins are very, very small. So the difference between a weak attempt and a narrow pass is actually pretty small. And so for that reason, you should make sure you get 10 out of 10 for the forum posts. So they are 10 very gettable marks, so don't get 8 out of 10, get 10 out of 10. And one way to do that is to do two posts in January and three in February is my suggestion. Get them out of the way early because I can tell you from experience, if you're leaving them to the end, they really are a bit of a millstone around your neck. When I did it, and I think it's still true, we had we were told that there was a 200-word limit for posts. I can tell you that very, very few students keep strictly to that limit. But I think, please, for the benefit of your fellow students, keep the posts succinct. Try and keep them short and punchy. Not so easy to do, but it really helps if the other students who are trying to read through them and find ways to respond to them. And if you're stuck, my suggestion was to find a relevant issue somewhere in the textbook or somewhere in the notes. If you're stuck trying to find a subject to post about, find some interesting little quirky issue, do a little bit of research on it, and summarise your thoughts and ask the other students to comment on them. My next suggestion is to make sure you attend the tutorials. So I think they are a great opportunity to challenge yourself throughout the semester. And I can tell you also from experience that the people who attend the tutorials are the ones who tend to do extremely well on the exam. Way more than 32% of the tutorial attendees pass the exam. So I know there's a difference between correlation and causation, that's the word. There you go. I know there's a difference between correlation and causation, but I think as actuaries, or as prospective actuaries, we care a lot about correlation, so that, I think that will help you. Do the study groups if they work for you. But the other thing is, do the base your 15-week study schedule around the course notes. So you have 15 weeks in the semester, and you've got the course notes. So you've got to work through them at a particular rate, so that you leave enough time for your past exams. So my suggestion is, don't get stuck on anything. You could easily let a week go by on one point, but try not to do that. In fact, try not to even let 2 days go by without making some progress. For the CAP exam, is anyone here doing CAP in their first semester? Yeah, probably unlikely. But anyway, my advice for that is do the pre-coursework well ahead of time, obviously, especially there's 6 case studies, which each take you probably about a day to do them properly. Then enjoy the course, which I think is the highlight of the whole Part 3 experience. It's really enjoyable. All the sessions are entertaining. There's a buzz of excitement around the air that everyone's just close to finishing their Part 3s. And there's a little bit of tension that you've still got one more exam to go. My best advice for CAP is to ignore my advice. Instead, the best people for giving advice on CAP are the course instructors. So my advice would be to, if you're getting a lot of suggestions from other people, filter out all the noise and listen to the course instructors. So finally, good luck for your exams. I hope you agree with me that we are privileged in our profession to have the opportunity to prove ourselves in this arena. Don't worry about failing, but don't give up. I noticed in the notes it said that the average amount of time it takes someone to complete the Part 3 is 3 years. If you assume that there is, let's be generous and say a 40% pass rate for any the exams as a whole, then that means that on average each student is getting through 0.4 exams per semester, right? That means you've got to get through 4 exams, so therefore the average student should take about 10 semesters, which equals 5 years, not 3. And that doesn't include anyone who's taking semesters off for other things. So the fact that the average time to complete Part 3 is 3 years suggests that there are a lot of people who are apparently giving up somewhere along the way. So I hope that's not you. I hope that if you are feeling a little bit discouraged, that you will continue doing it, because I'm convinced that if you've got this far, you're certainly capable of passing Part 3. And my final comment is a quote from one of my principals at my firm, who says that you're not a real actuary unless you fail at least one exam. So there is a rite of passage associated with failing an exam. So I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I know someone who probably doesn't agree with that. That's David Barnes. So he's coming to speak next. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hi everyone, my name's David Barnes and I do like to hope that I can call myself a real actuary, but I've been fortunate to go through them without ticking off the number one, without ticking off a fail. But I thought I would, kick off today by asking you to be brave and just put up your hands and say if you think you're going to pass this semester. So, one person. Couple of people, so we could be in for a new record in low pass rates by the looks of it, based on the hands, but I really hope not. But if you look down at your slides and see that picture of a monster that I've got there, if that's how you're feeling, these exams are for you at this point. You're not alone in thinking that, so that's certainly what I was thinking when I was in the same position as you, just I assume most of you. Starting your part threes, they seem pretty scary. I've heard a lot about these 30% pass rates and thinking, well, if I'm trying it and I'm doing an exam on my first attempt, other people have had multiple goes. I've just finished uni, other people have been working in this for a while. I've got basically no chance of getting through was kind of what I was telling myself. So I was hopeful that that wasn't going to be the case, but my expectations were not particularly high, and I imagine that's how some of you are feeling at this point as well. So to go into that a little bit more, I guess I just finished uni, just started a full-time job, so already struggling with this transition of I did have all the free time in the world, or by comparison, and then all of a sudden I've got to go to work every day and they expect me to stay the whole day at work, not just do a couple of hours for a lecture. And so there was this great shift there, and then I get my course materials a couple of weeks into full-time work and there's this fat GI textbook. There's another bundle of course materials, and then everyone in my office is telling me, we'll make sure that you read all of this stuff before April so that you've got plenty of time to do your past exams. I'm thinking, this does not sound fun. But I listened to them and I worked, I got started pretty much straight away when that came in. And I made a plan of how am I going to possibly get through all of this reading. So I figured out these are the things that I need to read. These are the days where I'm available to read stuff. This is how much I need to read each day to get through it all. And I had this great plan of how I was going to get through everything by April, so then I would have plenty of time before my exam in May to work on my practice exams and hopefully pass the course. So I guess going through that, I had done all of my reading. As I read, I made these great textbook summaries that I thought were going to be really helpful, so I knew all of the material in the textbook really well, or so I thought. And it got to the beginning of April and I thought, okay, I'm ready to start my first exam. I did an exam under exam conditions, so I sat down for 3 hours, read it out, went to market and found myself getting 30%. And I was like, oh dear, that's not good. But the good news is that that was able to change as I did more past exams going through. So I guess at that point I'd heard people tell me that past exams were important, but I still thought, hey, it's got to be like a uni exam. If I just know the material, then that'll be fine and I'll be done with it. But that was kind of my big sudden realization of the fact that actually these exams do work a little bit differently. Actually, I do need to do these past exams. But just by doing a bunch of them, under exam conditions and practicing them, I found that 30% was able to bump up quite quickly. So I guess my first tip for you would be to just make sure that you're planning your semester well. Make sure that you've planned time to both do the content and do the exams. But also to just acknowledge that when you start part threes, it's pretty normal to be a bit scared of them. It's pretty normal to think that they're this great, ugly beast that's going to make your life miserable for a long time. But hopefully that as you go through, you'll realize that, yes, there's some truth to that, but also that these exams actually are passable, that people do pass these exams, and that if it's 30% that pass, well, there's no reason why you can't be part of that 30%. And if you all agree to be part of that 30%, then 30 is going to become more than 30, which I think everyone in the room would be pleased to hear. So I guess that's the first thing. I've also written down in the slides there, just expect to pass. Now, that might sound a little bit controversial, and if the pass rate's 30%, a good actuary would tell you that your expectation is not to pass but to fail. But I think it's really important, while acknowledging that most likely people will fail something along the way to becoming a fellow, that if you begin your semester thinking, you know what, I'm going to fail this semester, and then something gets a little bit difficult along the way and maybe work picks up or your friends want to go to the beach and you don't want to tell them that you're studying actuarial exams and you need to do some work, that if your expectation all along is to fail and you think, well, everyone takes a while to get through these, so I'll just fail this one and then I'll try again and hope that it works out better next time, I think you're setting yourself up to fulfill your expectations. So it's not a case of expect to pass and be so convinced that you're going to pass that if you fail that totally breaks you, because realistically there are people that are going to fail these exams with a 30% pass rate. But if you set that expectation of I can pass this exam, it is an exam, I've passed exams before, and I'm going to do the work so that I can pass, then I think that sets you up and goes a long way towards you having success in these exams. But below expect to pass, I've also got prepare accordingly. So those two go completely hand in hand. It's not expect to pass and then go to the beach every day and enjoy yourself all semester and come into the exam and wonder why you didn't pass. It's expect to pass, but then do the preparation to support that. In terms of what that looks like, a lot of people have already shared bits and pieces about that. For me, I think the first thing that comes to mind is just come up with your plan for how you're going to structure your semester to get through everything you need to get through. Now, for different people, you'll find that you need to do slightly different things and spend different amounts of time on exams versus content and things like that. But figure out early on how you're going to get through everything that you need to get through. And particularly if it's your first exam, figure out how you're going to get through everything so that it's not the day before your exam when you're still trying to tidy up the content, but so that you've got a bit of breathing room at the end to adjust and say, this bit didn't work out quite as well as I wanted, this bit didn't help me that much, but overall you've still got time to recover. So I guess like my story of the first past exam I did for 3A, don't let that happen the day before you do the exam, because at that point you don't have time to figure out what's gone wrong and learn and improve. If it's the day before the exam and you're figuring that out, then you're unlikely to be able to fix all of that by the day of the exam the next day. In terms of the past exams and the course materials, I'm not sure how many of you have flicked through your course materials as yet, but one of the things that you'll notice in the course materials is that the way they're structured is there's a bunch of APRA readings generally, or at least the exams I sat. There's APRA kind of statutory rules for how we do capital, or how, various things that APRA sets standards for. Then there's more general readings, so it might be from a textbook or from a research paper or something like that. And then there's the core, this is the content of the course So for a GI exam, and I apologise if you're not doing GI and don't know anything about reserving methods, but I find them the easiest way to give an example. So, and hopefully you would have seen them in part ones, at least at a very high level. So the GI course for reserving requires you to know how to do triangles and then project out your liability. So there's readings that tell you, well, this is what a triangle is, this is how you project out your liability. Then there are academic papers that tell you about different nuances to that. And then there are APRA papers that tell you, these are the rules, make sure you stick to the rules. So of those, I think the APRA regulations are probably the most important to make sure you're very familiar with. I just found when I was going through exams, they always seem to come up and be relevant. The broader content is obviously important to be aware of, but a lot of that you'll find that if you're working in the area, you've seen it work before, or maybe you've seen something similar at uni before, so don't feel like you need to really pore over all of the detail of that. It may be something that you skim read and say, hey, I already know this, so I don't need to go through all the detail. And equally, it may be something where you see the heading and you say, I got no idea what that means. And so then, obviously, you need to read it more carefully and make sure that you do know what it means. The other thing is, it's been mentioned before, but a lot of your employers will provide support for these exams. So paying for them in a lot of cases and also giving you study leave and more senior people at work to ask your questions of. Really recommend that you think of study leave as study leave rather than a day to catch up on your watching and your favourite daytime television show. As much as daytime television is really appealing, and you might not think it's appealing now, but when you come to a study day, you'll think it's very appealing. But as much as that's tempting to do, if you waste your study day, then that probably means you need to waste your weekend catching up on the study that you should have done on your study day. So I can't really recommend enough just using that time well and saying, if I was at work, I was going to do a full day of work, so I'm going to do a full day of study instead. And then hopefully that frees you up to maintain a little bit more of that work-life balance that you want. And come the weekend, maybe you don't need to do any, or you don't need to do much study then if you're using the rest of your time well. And again, you may have different preferences to me in terms of how highly you value daytime television, but I tend to think that if you're spending your free time on daytime television, then you can probably think of better things to spend your free time doing. So it's not the greatest way to procrastinate. Then also in terms of support that you can get at work, I understand that'll be different between different employers, but to the extent that you're able to, it's just really helpful to ask questions at work. They can probably show you practical examples of stuff that you do at work that's somewhat related to the problem that you're having, and that can often help you understand it better. And at the end of the day, if they're giving you study leave, if they're paying for your exams, if they're doing all of this stuff, they really want you to pass. Everyone wants you to pass, so they're wanting to support you in the best way that they can. So do take advantage of that. The final thing I was going to talk to is just the discussion forums. So I found, depending on the subject, some discussion forums were really helpful. The commercial actuarial practice course, which none of you are doing, can highly recommend the discussion forums on there. Just found that really helpful to be able to say, this is my attempt at a problem, hear the course instructor's feedback and understand where I've gone wrong, how I can improve. But for all of them, as it's been said, I think from everyone so far, that 10 marks that you can get on discussion forums are easier than any other 10 marks that you're going to get through the course. So even if you know virtually nothing about the actual content of the course, I think if you find a relevant news article, read it and summarise it, you can go close to getting a fair few of those 10 marks on the discussion forum, and hopefully you do know something about the course and can do better than that. So just make sure that you get those marks, because no one wants to do these exams more times than they have to. And I think one of the tutors last semester, he gave advice that, while somewhat late for me to hear, I think is just something that's really helpful, which was that if you spend 85% of your effort doing a course and then don't pass and have to spend 85% effort again the next semester doing it again, you spend a lot more effort than doing it 100% the first time and doing it once. So to the extent that you can work that little bit harder and then increase your chances of success, the harder you work, the more likely you are to succeed with these. And you really just want to, as much as possible, try and tick them off and get your work-life balance back again and not have to dread exam day anymore and all of these wonderful things that happen once you finish them off. So, good luck to everyone, and hopefully I'll see all of you having lots of success this semester and in semesters to come.
That ends the formal part of this evening. I would particularly like to thank Tim and David and Danny for volunteering their time to be here with you tonight and sharing their experiences and their tips. So, a little quick thank you. I certainly felt that they're really valuable tips, and I hope you found it interesting and helpful. Are there any final questions before we finish this particular component? Okay. As I said, we've got some pizza. We'll be sticking around in case you've got some questions. Happy to answer them. And thank you very much for your attendance tonight, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you for those attending online as well. Thank you.